The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast brought to you by Huntworth. Huntworth bringing you quality hunting clothing and packs at a price that you deserve. Huntworth is giving a ton of stuff away in our Patreon giveaway. Guys, like almost $500 worth of clothing, all stuff that they've already gave to us and been testing it out. Just incredible stuff. So if you're looking for that Midwest whitetail hunting, like quality clothing that's not at a ridiculous price and stuff that's going to last, going to keep you warm. I mean, some of the warmest stuff that I've used late season and the stuff that I've been using here early season, it's been incredibly durable. So real happy to have Huntworth on board with us. Check them out at huntworthgear.com. Today's podcast, we're talking with Brad Luttrell from Go Wild. I actually sat down and talked with Brad at the ATA show, and I've had some phone conversations with him since. And just with everything that had happened, you know, just prior to the ATA show, with some of the major hunting platforms like Seek One in particular getting demonetized because of their content and kind of having causing them to shift their business model and things like that from YouTube. It's kind of important to talk, kind of going off of what we were talking with John Stallone with the Howl stuff about, you know, our lifestyle, be it, you know, hunting and inevitably killing and blood and all the things that kind of go along with it, even though that's not why we're into it. You know, people take offense to that and they, have chosen to, you know, shadow ban people and not promote things that they don't agree with. And there's guys like Brad coming out with platforms like Go Wild that are kind of allowing, not necessarily like a free-for-all. I mean, obviously they don't promote hate or anything like that, but it just allows hunters to be hunters, interact, you know, post pictures with their rifles or, you know, with their bows, with the animals that they've killed and things like that without any fear of, you know, being blocked or censored. So it's a really great podcast. I think you guys are going to enjoy that. I mentioned Huntworth and their donations to our Patreons. Patreon is a crowdfunding for creators and it helps us to do things. Right now I'm recording on a new microphone and stand. I'm going to start doing some, I feel like we're getting so far away from the things that are going on here, with, you know, I got a brand new bow here, from Bear that we've been testing. I got an Easy V sight. I've got some Redline stuff, that we're testing. I've got a Schaefer Rest, all these things, all this new gear, arrows, all sorts of things that we're testing. And we really haven't talked a lot about that. John's been gone. He's back now. But I think I'm going to start doing some like talking head YouTube videos and kind of going through, kind of like video podcast style, what's going on here. Frank's been shooting the Easy V and, really enjoying that. We've got some other things coming up here too, but anyways, Patreon allows us to kind of do some of that stuff and help with the video and the all the cost associated with it. But we try and give back as much as we can. Like I said, you know, a huge package from Huntworth. We're working with Spartan Forge again this year. Spartan Forge is, you know, artificial intelligence for the deer woods, crazy mapping. They're using military grade, artificial intelligence to track deer, not deer specifically, but deer movements and patterns, to tell you what days are going to be the best to be in the woods. And, Spartan Forge is giving away one of their year subscriptions. Lucky Buck is giving away either a tub of their mineral, if you can use it. We're using that up in the UP as a supplemental feed and, getting pictures on that right now. Almost immediately that took off for us. And if you can't do that, they've got food plot seed and other things like that. And you can check them out at luckybuck.com. And our friends at Zinger, Zinger Fletchings, they're giving away another one of their packs of either the, you know, whatever ones are for your arrows, but they're 3D printed flexible fletchings. They go on in like 2 seconds and they're not fobs. They're compression fit fletchings. Just incredible. But beyond that, you know, that's all from people that are working with us. You know, we bought a Bear Montana longbow and the guys at Selway sent a Bear quiver. We got a bunch of accessories to go along with it. One of our other Patreons, Tom Taylor, set up a full dozen fletched arrows. He took a picture, posted that on social media, and that's going to be given away. So, I mean, you got about, if you want to win that bow, you got about another week or so to sign up. And it's, I mean, 33 cents a day to get in and get a chance, you know, support the people that you're supporting. I mean, hell, I support a couple of podcasts on Patreon because I appreciate what they're doing and I know what it takes to do this. And, you know, it's just one of those things for me, but we really appreciate it. We couldn't thank you guys enough. And if that's not it, you know, it's not for you, not a big deal, but we really do appreciate it. But, you know, leave us a review, tell a friend, say, hey, have you heard about this? Have you heard about that? You know, the Howl podcast is doing really well. And that's something that's really important, you know, getting out there, much like this Go Wild, to, you know, kind of come together as hunters and kind of stand up for one another and kind of keep what we've become accustomed to alive. But yeah, tell a friend and thanks for listening. Enjoy the episode. All right, everybody, Adam back with another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. John is once again on his hiatus in Florida doing some saltwater fishing. So it's just going to be me today. And we are going to be talking with Brad from Go Wild tonight. And we'll talk to Brad and then we'll kind of get into what we're going to talk about today. So how are you doing tonight, Brad?
Hey man, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here with you as always, and I always love talking to a podcaster and getting to get in touch with a new audience and kind of share a little bit about what we do. But also, you know, hunting podcasts are fun. You never know where they're going to go. You never know how long they're going to be. So I'm pumped.
So what's your history with hunting in and of itself, right?
Yeah. So I grew up southeastern Kentucky. It's Appalachia. A lot of people are probably wondering where my accent is. Unfortunately, I lost it in college, most of it. I can, my co-founder Chris will tell you I still got it if I'm talking to my mamaw. I told him one day we were in the car together and I said, I'm about to talk to my mamaw and I just want to let you know I'm about to full blown like code switch on you. And he had never heard that term. So I still got it if I need it. But I grew up there. I grew up mostly fishing as a young kid. You know, teenage years started small game hunting a little bit with my dad and squirrel hunting. And then after college, I got into, you know, you go to college, I didn't do anything with the outdoors really besides camp and hike. And I guess camp, hike and off-road. I was really big into off-roading all throughout I think I got my first four-wheeler. I was like six, you know, but I didn't really get hardcore into hunting until after college. You know, I just started missing my roots and started deer hunting with a guy, and you know, at first I thought it was easy because I was hunting with a good deer hunter. And when I wasn't able to hunt with him anymore, I learned how hard it is to learn whitetail. And I went on this multi-year journey of sucking. And some might say I still suck, and I might still agree with them. I'm at least better and more knowledgeable, partially because of what came out of this, which was our platform. But I spent you know, several years frustrated trying to learn about whitetail. This was from like 2014 to 16 that I was like starting this period of really focusing on whitetail. And then I guess it was even before that, maybe a little bit 13 to 16, but and was frustrated with it. And now it's like, oh my God, how could you not learn online? But I mean, this is pre-Hunting Public. This is pre-Meat Eater. Like a lot of the shows that people accredit with getting into, or like, you know, helping them along the way didn't really exist. So eventually this would, you know, we'll probably talk about it at some point, but eventually I got fed up with not being able to ask questions of people locally. Like I just wanted to ask some Kentuckians about deer hunting, and I didn't have any friends that did it really. So I ended up building a platform to help me selfishly, right? Like that's kind of always the entrepreneurial story, is you see something that you think other people would like, cause it would help you. But I've gotten, you know, since then, I've gotten really into whitetail hunting, love whitetail, love deer hunting, love, dove hunting, which, you know, something super fun. It's kind of like the gateway drug to hunting, cause there's beer and like people chill out and hang out in a field. Right. But then, you know, I'm still trying out all the ways you can hunt on the East Coast. You know, there's a whole world of Western that I haven't even done yet. So that's kind of my hunting journey in a nutshell. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff to it, but, the food aspect of it, you know, just keeps me super excited about it.
So when you quote unquote started out and started sucking, was that public land or private land or?
Yeah, I've done both. The guy I was hunting with that I mentioned earlier was private. So we were hunting, probably 30 acres, 20 to 30 acre plots down in southeastern Kentucky. Lower deer population down there, but you know, this guy was good and he knew where to go and he had his cameras and he knew where they were coming through and he had stands already set up. So it was literally like, just show up and see deer. And, I thought that's what it was like, but then I started hunting on public by myself and, you know, public land in southeastern Kentucky on opening day, it was like a Walmart parking lot. You know, there's orange everywhere. That was my first intro to the Orange Army, was that first season I went out. And you know, it's crazy that one day, that literally the day before, you're out there and there's nobody out there, and then opening morning, it's nuts. So I learned some lessons of how much the woods changes on opening weekend of gun in modern gun in eastern Kentucky. But yeah, I've done quite a bit of both. My success is not on public. I mean, usually I'm hunting public in eastern Kentucky, and it is tough, man. It's like pressured deer. I've got this one spot that I love. It's down tucked into the Cumberland Gap area. That's where I'm from. And, you know, there's a good amount of public land down there, but I like trying to find the stuff that's like really, not even accessible to, a side by side or a four wheeler or something, and trying to hike in. And it's fun. It's like a little taste of, Western hunting here on the East Coast. Still haven't gotten anything out of there. But it's fun. You know, I guess the answer to that is I've done my share of both.
So you're not much different than, you know, a lot of the guys that listen to this show. One of the big things is we're trying to bring on guys and help them to, you know, teach me. Same thing with this podcast is like you building the platform, right? It's like, now I've got, I curtail myself as the world's worst bow hunter. And so when I talk to other guys, you know, guys that are much better hunters than I am or than we are, I'm always asking it from like a genuine place and from, you know, from the new guy perspective. Cause there's people on here that have never killed a deer with a bow, that have never killed a deer ever, that have never killed their first buck. So in that time from being, you know, from sucking. And so now not to sucking that much, or not sucking as bad. What do you think has changed? Like what's one of the biggest things that you've taken away, you know, that you've learned that's helped you not or I guess to be better.
Yeah, I think a ton of whitetail guys, and even the guy I used to hunt with, did not play the wind very well. I learned this later. I think a ton of whitetail guys think that they're just going to cover up their scent, and it doesn't matter. A lot of guys hunt the same stand over and over. And I used to do that. I played that game. I just thought you had your stand and you go out and you sit in your stand and like deer get used to it. A couple of years ago, I started moving a lot more around, and even on like a 70 acre property, I can maximize my deer that I'm seeing like fivefold if I'm paying attention to the wind and thinking about how, you know, bucks like to move through the wind and, you know, really getting an understanding for, again, I'm not good. I don't want to like try to make myself sound cool. This is what I've learned. But like trying to get an understanding of desires for that time of year. I think a lot of people hang trail cameras up and they see them coming through in August and they think they're going to be there in November and they're not. That's not how it works. You know, I learned that the hard way a couple different years. One year I had this freaky tall 11 point deer on camera all through, you know, watched him go through velvet and everything. And he's at my stand without bait, like consistently. And I thought I was going to come in there and kill that deer. And, you know, I hunted that stand, I don't know, probably 8 different days, never saw that deer, never saw more than a forky. And then I was talking to the, this was an early lesson for me. I was talking to a guy that was private property. It's a huge swath of private property down in Appalachia, though. It's probably 600 acres. And this guy that managed the land was like, oh yeah, the deer aren't down here anymore. They're up the mountain. And I was like, well, what do you mean? And he's like, well, I don't know. This guy didn't even hunt. He's just like, I don't know, but I stopped seeing them in November down here. They move up, like the rut was hitting and they were moving up in the cover, I guess, chasing those does. And I was like, well, holy smokes, I've been sitting down here for days not seeing deer. And I thought that it was just like a timing thing. I'm like, no, they're going to come back through here eventually. And so you just learn, you know, to really try to figure out where they're going to be. Now the ruts also can be crazy. And, you know, I've shot multiple deer that had never been on camera before. And they, you know, who knows where they were coming from. But one of my biggest things, I'll just repeat that, of like, one of the biggest things I've learned is getting mobile and trying to anticipate where they're going to be given the wind. And even on a property as small as what I hunt, it makes a huge difference. I mean, I've got, let's see, 3 stands there. I've got a climber stand out there. And I keep telling myself I'm going to get into a system like tethered or you know, some kind of saddle because that's the ultimate mobility. Because then, I mean, I really have free range over that whole property. And I think it would open up even more visibility, more deer. I mean, I know there's big deer out there because I've seen them. I had one encounter a few years ago where last night of archery before Modern Gun, I had a huge mature 8-point come in. I had the 10-point I had been targeting. And then I had one of the biggest deer I've ever seen in my life, who I couldn't tell, he was too far away to get a inch count. And I'm not, or a point count. And I'm not a guy who can be like, oh, it was 190 inches. I don't see enough 190 inch deer to know what that looks like. But it was the biggest deer I've ever seen. I thought it was a cow the first time I saw it, and he was dogging a doe, and they're all coming down into this spot. And then I didn't see another one of those deer the rest of the season. So, which I had seen that 10 point multiple times. He was my target. I'd had him on camera, but the rut just gets so crazy, you know? So, I try to just do a better job of anticipating based off wind. Like that's really the thing I've learned the most. There's obviously other things, but you know, I worry about scent way less than I used to, because it's just, you're just not going to fool a deer. Like it really just comes down to that. I mean, if you smell lasagna, they can smell all 13 ingredients in it. You know, there's just, their noses are unreal. The way I always think about it is, I walk outside and I smell a skunk that's really strong. I'm stopping and I'm going to look around to see if there's a skunk on my doorstep. Right. If you walk out and it's really faint though, you might keep going. That's basically what you're trying to do with scent, is that, like, you're not going to cover scent, but you might make it thin enough to where they won't freak out. And that's basically what I try to do. I don't get obsessive about it anymore like I used to. And I see more deer than I used to. Again, could be a fluke. I don't claim to be like, I didn't come on here to really give deer advice because I'm not the guy you should. Like, I accidentally shot a spiked deer this year and tagged out my buck tag. Like, I'm an idiot. Don't listen to me. But that you to answer your question, it's scent.
Well, I mean, that's the real life of deer hunting. And I think, you know, as we get further into this, it's been said everywhere. It doesn't matter whether it's talking about people showing off their money, their cars, their girlfriend, their gym, like it's people's highlight reels. Right. And so for guys, you know, when you're not necessarily, you know, this isn't your first year hunting, but you're rather new to the game of whitetail hunting, for guys that have been doing it for 40 years or whatever, you know, they think that you're just going to walk in and kill a 140 and everybody's killing 140s. And, you know, I can't tell you how many people that you see on social media that we talk to and they're like, yeah, I'm not going to kill anything smaller than a 6 point or I'm not going to kill. And it's like, you know, why? Because someone else is going to say something about it or whatever, you know?
Yeah, dude. I mean, it's so funny this year. I'll tell the quick version of what happened to me this year. I had seen what I thought was an 11 point in person. I had such a crazy fall. I didn't even run cameras last year. I just showed up. And on one of my first few hunts, I saw this huge 11 point. I'm like, that's my target. And I was archery hunting. I felt really good about it. I knew I had enough days. I was like, I'm going to find that deer. And I did see him a couple times, including the last night. I always have like interactions with really good deer the last night before gun season opens up. But I'd seen this deer a couple times. And opening day of gun season, on my walk out, I decided to get out a little bit, like maybe 5 minutes left of shooting light in case I didn't want to bump anything that might be behind me and I wanted to be able to see. I come out and I face this deer and he is looking at me at about 80 yards and I'm huffing and puffing because I just climbed out of a tree and walked up this hill with this big all day bag. So it was heavy. It had all my stuff that I've been out there with. And I could only see him really neck up. And I was like, I don't know if I want to neck shoot this deer. I'm huffing a little bit from being winded. It's a new gun that I'm comfortable sitting and breathing, you know, normal pace. But, you know, I just was like, you know, not a position I felt comfortable. So I let him walk and he ran off. It was a good, I had plenty of time to think about it. It was 45 seconds. I pulled up on him. I let him go. And I'm like, well, he wasn't too spooked. He kind of like trotted off. I was like, he's probably going to be in this area tomorrow. Came back the next day and I started seeing deer immediately. Weather was like 36 degrees and raining, which is my least favorite. It was just like spitting. I'd rather it snow, right? I was seeing deer and I saw this spike that I had passed on 6 times in archery season. And I was seeing a ton of spikes and forkies and I passed on a 6 and an 8 point. And there was this decent little 8 point out there. But, you know, I'm like, I have plenty of time left to be patient. And I'm always kind of like, I don't want my hunt to be over. You know, if I shoot something first day out in archery, because my wife gets, I try to stop telling my wife about deer I saw because she'll get mad. She's like, why are you doing this? It's like day 8, you know, shoot something. And I'm like, well, gun season's coming. I'll see what happens. So second day, I'm passing on the spike and then that 8 point comes out at 110 yards and he's got his head turned towards me like at a weird angle. And so I couldn't see how tall the tines are. And I was sure it was that 8 point. Well, I only had about from where he came out, I only had about 15 yards to make a decision because then it gets through where a pass through would be going into the neighbor's property. And I knew there was a guy hunting down there. So it's like an unsafe situation. This deer gets right at that point, probably 13 yards of the 15, and looks up out of that weird head tilt he was doing. It's the freaking 11 point that I've been looking for the whole season. And I'm like, oh my God, I just passed on my deer because I'm an idiot. And on day 2 of gun in Shelby County, where it's like everybody is shooting everything, right? I heard a 100 shots before 8 a.m. the day before. Like every deer in the county is getting wiped out. Why did I not shoot the 8 point? And so I sit there, this deer walks over the hill. I hear a gunshot and I'm pissed. And I'm sitting here all day. I sat for 4 hours scolding myself for being so stupid. And then finally, I'm like, I don't even have, I'm running out of meat. I'm shooting the first thing that shows up. If it's a like first doe that shows up, this doe walks up 110 yards going the opposite direction of the one that I passed on before. And she's moving. I'm verifying, 'cause I know that spike is out there, and he had these tiny little, just big enough to count points. And I verified three times through my scope that it was a doe. I shot her. Long story short, after a long blood trail, I found her, and it was the freaking spike. I had shot when the ears were up, and I've got a picture to prove it of me holding them. You can't see the antlers. So his ears were up because it was windy. And the only way I was able to get that deer to even stop, I was trying to bleat, like to get any kind of a sound for them to look up. Never would. I finally shouted like, "Wah!" You know, like the goat from the movies, basically, like just shouting a loud noise into the air, and that worked. And I ended up tagging out like an idiot on I will never again shoot a doe that far away when I've got a buck tag sitting in my pocket, because Kentucky, you only get one buck tag. So I was spent, you know?
Well, it's funny because and apparently some of our listeners, one of the guys on our Marco Polo found a spike shed already. And they call them the Michigan 11 point. So, I mean, there you go.
Yeah, that's so funny. That's really funny. I got the skull of this thing in the freezer. I've joked that I'm going to mount it on an oversized plaque, like 2 feet by 2 feet. And it's going to have a little sign under the skull that says like all decisions have consequences or something like that. Like it's a good reminder for me, because I got greedy and I should have shot that 8 point. And I would have had a heck of a lot more meat. I would have had, not that the trophy matters, I don't really care. I've never even haven't measured any deer I've ever shot. And I've got a couple of nice bucks hanging on the wall at work. But you know, I just don't really care. But I was so furious and embarrassed and like all the things, you know. But you know, Go Wild, I posted about it and talked about it on there. 'Cause I was like, you know, I created this platform for people to be able to share this kind of stuff without feeling embarrassed about it. And it was awesome because I shared it and I had so many dudes that are like, dude, I've done it too. And it made me feel better. Like it really did make me feel better to know that other people are doing it too.
I feel like, I mean, well, so first of all, prior to you shooting that deer, you said, well, I'm running out of meat. So
yeah,
in reality, you know, you didn't ruin the meat. It's not like you could have shot the 8 point. It could have ran over onto the neighbors and you could have found him 4 days later and the meat was spoiled. True. I mean, there's so many things that, you know, when we think about it in our mind about how terrible things happen, you know, there's much worse things, you know, than actually harvesting a deer. Right. But I mean, I've done one that was almost, I would say worse. I had the tags for it, but I mean, I was sitting there one day and these deer were coming up over this ridge and there was two deer, both does. I had doe permit. I shoot, come down off the recoil, deer still standing there. And there was still two deer standing there. Yeah. I'm like, what in the world? So I rack another shell, shoot, I watched it fall, you know. I walk over there. There's two deer laying there. Apparently, there was a third one that had come up over the ridge that I didn't see. But, you know, you walk over there and you're like, oh, my God, like, what did I do? So, I mean, it could always be worse. You know, it could have been in a situation where I didn't have multiple doe permits where like now I don't have tags.
Right. But, yeah, I know. There are a lot of people that even joked with, there were some old timer guys that I ended up talking to about my story. And they're like, that's one of those drag it out in the woods and take the back straps only. I was like, look, man, I don't play that game. Like I screwed up and I'm going to own it. I'm not going to break the law because I'm an idiot. Like, you know, it burned me. And, I went back out one more time trying to find the doe, 'cause this thing ended up being so small by the time I found it. You know, I thought it was a decent doe, but it would have been a small, not small doe. It would have been normal. It just was not it wasn't nowhere near like my 2020 deer, which I called my COVID deer, because I found out I actually had COVID when I shot that deer. You know, that deer was so big that I had to go out and buy a pulley system after that, because I was like, never again will I get a deer I can't get up. Normally I can pull them up in my garage. So I went from like the biggest deer I've ever shot body wise to the one of the smallest deer I've ever shot body wise.
Well, I mean, if you're a numbers guy, it's just all averages out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a meat guy. So that 2020 deer was awesome. The neck roast on that thing was bigger than my thigh. It's insane. I mean, it's just like the fattest deer I've ever seen. He was huge. Hmm. Not a huge rack, but he was like genetically the body on that deer was very big for Kentucky.
Yeah, I shot one, the one that's behind me here. I shot
a good buck.
I shot one almost identical to that. It was a little bit bigger. In 2000, I think in 2018. And that deer was, after it had dressed and everything, it was just a 3.5 year old deer, but it was 187 pounds dressed.
That's so nice.
It was, I know what you're talking about. It was like a basketball size neck roast. It was,
yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. That's a good looking deer. So that, I don't know how wide that one is. It looks like it might be 20 or so. That's about like I would say the stature of, I can't see how tall his tines are, but that's about the stature of the deer I'd been targeting, like width wise and he didn't have a ton of mass, but he had good mass. And I actually ended up seeing this deer and I have a photo of him on my phone because he didn't die that day. I thought he did. But a week later, someone else that the property I hunt, a couple different guys end up hunting it every year. I'm on a, it's just like a friend. I don't pay for it. It's my dad's buddy lets me hunt it and he lets one or two other guys hunt it. And so, one of his family members came out and this guy's a Marine or not a Marine. I think he was Army. He serves and he never gets to hunt. And I was like, dude, if somebody's going to come in and get my deer, like he shot the deer I was targeting all season. And I was like, if somebody else was going to get it, I'm glad it was this dude, you know, because he never gets to hunt. It's like the only deer day of the year he was going to get to go. And he walked away. It ended up being, I thought it was 11 point, but it was a 12 or a 10. Killer deer, though. I'm sure this dude was stoked. But same stand and everything. Shot it right there in the same spot. So.
Well, it all worked out. I mean, and that's great that you can have that attitude. I mean, even now, like we said, like with social media and like, you know, guys in the same counties hunting the same, you know, show a trail cam picture and then somebody else, yeah. And then it becomes like your deer. And yeah. There's plenty of, you know, articles.
Oh, I've got buddies that have mourned. This guy I've met through Go Wild and have kind of gotten to become buddies with him, which he's a whitetail biologist and a manager. Like he manages properties for people and gives them plans and stuff. He had this freak of a deer that he's been watching for years and years and years and his neighbor shot it. And I think Zach might have cried a little bit. Like it was like, there's a picture of him with the deer and he just looks so sad, you know, which I get it, you know, that's his life. That's his livelihood. And he had watched this deer for forever. I don't get into it to that level. I've gotten obsessed with deer before in the past. And I kind of learned my lesson on a couple different seasons of just trying not to get too hung up on what you see on camera. You know, it's like a nice, it's nice to learn. If, you know, I've got a new property I was scouting. It's a very small, you know, 7-acre urban property. And, you know, it's nice to see what's out there, but I try not to use it of, I try not to get obsessed over it anymore, you know?
Yeah, I'm not at that level at all. But what I am doing is, like I say, I have the benefit or the luxury of getting to pick the brains of all these guys that are like,
right,
you know, high level hunters. And that trail camera stuff, I'm beginning to see like why it's important. And it isn't at all. These guys aren't using them. They're using them for inventory to know that that deer exists. And then they're using them to see. They don't really care what's going on other than the fact that that deer was there and was it in daylight or was it not? Was it morning or evening? What was the wind like? What was the temperature? What were the conditions? So you're thinking, you know, outside of the rut, bed to food. So if he was going this way, he must be bedding that way.
Yeah. Right?
And if he was going this way, the food must be going that, it must be over there. And when you start to look at trail camera photos, and I've got 2 years worth of trail cameras up at this one place over this community scrape, like I can tell you the days now, like October 25th through the 28th, that's when all those bucks, you know, they're not really rutting just yet. but they're checking that scrape looking for that hot dough, and that's the time frame. So like to be in there, and then oddly enough, the for us, our gun season starts November 15th. The last 2 years, there's been a bigger buck than this one on that scrape during shooting light, or like right at first light on the opener of gun season, which is much like you described for Kentucky. I mean, in Michigan, and this is Michigan public land, like, so it's about learning, you know. So back to what we were talking about before about, you know, you learned about scent and all this other stuff. You know, there's so many things, and I'd like to usually ask people that run trail cameras, like, what are you doing with the information? Right? Because I feel like so many people are what I would call like a trail camera enthusiast. Like they love having these pictures of these deer. Never seen him on the hoof. They don't know, but man, they're super excited that he's there. Yeah. These high level guys, what they're doing is they're saying, how can I kill him? Now I know that A, he exists, and I know that he's moving in daylight under these conditions. So now I need to put myself in a position to do it. Right.
Yeah. You know, I, for years on a gut, and again, I haven't killed like a 190 or something. So like, this is just observation. But for years have always kind of thought like, well, if I can find where the does are hanging though, like that's when rut starts, that's where you want to be. And I actually talking to my buddy, Zach, who I was talking about as a biologist, that's his strategy literally. In when rut hits, you're really focus. Like, I think a lot of guys get hung up on what I said earlier of I've seen the bucks coming through here. You know, they're me sitting there waiting on a deer that is up the mountain chasing the does. And, to Zach's point, the biologist, he's talked about like, you really just shift your game entirely to the does, and you're going to have a lot more luck that time of year. So looking for pinch points where, you know, you're more likely to have those deer funneling in, you know, if you do your scouting. And like, I'll now pay more attention to, I used to just scan past the does, you know, to get to the bucks. But now I want to see a lot of does coming through on my camera. Now, my buddy, Bill Thompson, who's the founder of Spartan Forge. I don't know if you know Bill.
Oh, yeah.
You,
good.
Okay.
Very familiar with Bill. Yeah.
Yeah. So Bill, you know, Bill's talked to me about, and I did a fascinating podcast on one of my shows with Bill, where Bill talked about like, you know, seeing tons of bucks on camera is not a good thing if you want to kill a big one. You know, you really are trying to, because they're not going to be around because they're super skittish. They're probably not even going to be on camera. Like Bill, for quick background for anybody that doesn't know who Bill is a, he's got chased terrorists for 20 years for the government. He's a data scientist and took everything that he learned from that and applied it to deer caller data. And now has the data to really, I mean, Bill is on his way, if not already, to understanding deer better than most people I know, right? Like it's kind of insane how much he understands their movements. And, you know, he's talked about how a truly mature buck will not even come near a trail camera. You know, they're like Bigfoot. You're not going to get them on camera because they know something changed. And, you know, he talks about how if he really is hunting for a big buck, he wants to see almost no deer on camera. So it kind of just depends on your objectives. Like for me, I don't know. If I'd shot that 8-point that I passed on, I would have been super happy, right? Like that's more of my speed. I'm not out there trying to kill a 190, 200 inch deer. It's just not really like the stress of that. I don't put enough time to do that. I'm not that obsessive about it. It's not what makes me happy. I'm not knocking you if that's your thing. That's fine. But I'm more, you know, just trying to get some volume out there and get, I like getting out and seeing them too. So, you know, Bill might like sitting 12 hours to see one big buck, but I don't know. I kind of like watching, you know, 15 deer come through in a day. There's a coyote. Like I like watching all that stuff. So,
well, I think that's the beauty of being hunters and being out there, and like something that you can't ever, I don't know, like quantify to the anti hunter, right? or to maybe to your wife or whatever, that they're like, how can you go out there and sit all that time and, you know, not shoot a deer? Like why was that fun? You know, like there was a hunt I did this year where I crawled like a quarter of a mile across these two fields to get set up right at last light for where these deer cross this ditch. And I was sweating and it was miserable. It was a terrible day. And ended up not shooting the deer because by the time when they got to where I was at, it was a little bit too dark to make the shot at the distance that I needed to make it. And I'm like, oh, that must have sucked. I'm like, that was awesome because I crawled that close, got that close, got set up, didn't get detected, you know. And just because I didn't shoot something doesn't mean that it wasn't like a successful hunt. And that's one of the things for new guys or whatever. It's like, what did you learn at the end of the day? Like, that's what's more important. Even if you messed up or even if you got busted or even if you saw nothing, like, if you ask yourself those questions, like, why did that happen or what can I take away from this, then you're going to be a better hunter for the next time and the next time and the next time after that. And it's really difficult to be in the woods and see your first deer or trying to make that first, you know, shot or take that first opportunity. If you haven't been in a situation where there's been deer around you or you've let deer walk or, you know, you've not been detected by that bird that lands on your shoulder or something, you know, just those cool little things that, that make the hunt, you know?
Yeah. It's funny. One of our teammates had hunted and he killed deer before, but it was kind of like my situation where a lot of his hunts had been, you know, with somebody else. I think Braden, who's I'm talking about, some people may know him from the platform. Braden is definitely relearning. He had a good learning season, and I kept giving him a hard time because he loves to fish. He's really good at fishing. And you know, fishing, if you're good, you're going to go out and probably hammer a couple, right? Like, you're going to catch something. You may not be huge, blah, 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 but like, it's different than hunting. And he kept getting so jacked up. And he's like, I'm going to get something tomorrow. I'm going to get it. Like, he's getting all fired up. And I'm like, I mean, probably not, Braden. Like, it's like, this isn't really, you know, I'll go out and a lot of times I'll hunt 25 times throughout deer season. No, it's not full day sits, but like, you know, well, at least before I got neck deep into go wild, a lot of times I would have 20, you know, 20 plus sits. And it's like, kill one deer out of that, you know. It's like you gotta, it's a different animal of a hobby. I hate calling it a hobby. I like to call it a lifestyle, but if you want to call it that just for comparison, like, it's not fishing, man. It's not high action like that where you can go out and do that every night and get bass thumb. It's just different. This year I got, you know, I had multiple instances of seeing tons of deer at, like, one time I hunted from the ground because it was super windy. You know, and I got them like coming up within 5 yards and they don't even know I'm sitting there. And it's fun to see what you can get away with, right? When you're kind of learning, like, how much can you push it and move before they spook or anything. I think all that stuff's super fun. I sat one time this season, I was hunting a creek along a creek, which is kind of the property line. And this red-tail hawk was bombing these squirrels trying to pick one up. And I watched this thing for 2 hours coming through there. It's like, this is a nature show, you know? I mean, you never know what you're going to see.
So as we're coming up, like, on turkey season, like, where are you at with that?
Yeah, I love turkey hunting, man. I also kind of suck at turkey hunting. I feel like I've gotten a lot better at it over the years. The last year I didn't get one, but it honestly, I felt like it was my best performance turkey hunting, which is, sounds kind of weird. We had a sweepstakes winner from Go Wild who came down from Michigan. It was supposed to happen in 2020, got canceled because of COVID. So he comes in and we had, Jeremiah Dowdy from Field to Plate. I don't know if anybody knows him. He's a chef, wild game chef. And then I had his buddy, Tony Caggiano, who is a professional turkey guide. At last year, when we killed this bird, this was like this was Tony's 386th bird or something that he had guided. And he's killed more than 300 himself. So, like, I literally know no one that's killed more turkeys than this guy. And so I got to watch him that weekend hunting and calling. And I learned more probably in those 2 days of watching Tony than any amount of YouTube videos, any amount of watching meat eater or listening to podcasts. And you know, I love the Turkey Tech app for learning to call. I recommend it to everybody. Well, it's my buddy Taylor's app. He's got Scott Ellis on there teaching you how to call. It's awesome, but nothing beats seeing a real guide in person working a bird. And we ended up killing the third largest bird that Tony had ever guided to. It was a big monster of a turkey. And I got to watch him pull this thing off a hen and down 100 yards and come in for a perfect shot. I loved that. And then I had multiple times when the birds were still very much henned up for like a majority of the season. And Tony was able to pull a bird off of a live hen, which is very hard to do if you've been turkey hunting, especially at that distance. I had multiple times when I was getting into birds that were with hens, and I'm not Tony, I couldn't do it, but I applied a lot of what I knew and I would get them into like 40 yards, but through brush and whatnot that you're hunting with a turkey, I couldn't make it happen. But it was a super fun season because I felt like that bird, I had that bird convinced I was real, right? Like that we were going back and forth. I just couldn't, you know, I didn't have the finesse. That's really where like what I realized with him, it's not your yelping. Like your yelping can sound like crap. Honestly, like, so it's, you can, a lot of times he would yelp and I'd be like, really, you know, and it's not that he sounded bad. He's just like, he knows that they have variation. I hunted a couple times with my co-founder last season. You know, again, we get them into one time with Tony, even Tony had a couple of hunts that we did that he couldn't get them off the hens either. I mean, it was just one of those seasons. But I love it, man. Like I even turkey hunting, I come home sometimes and I'm so excited because, you know, you're 5 yards from coyotes that are running by. And, you know, I basically turkey season is my favorite when it's spring. And then if you ask me like, you know, even in midsummer, I'm like, oh yeah, deer hunting. Cause deer hunting's coming up. Like I just love them so much for different reasons.
So what were you able to, like you said, it helped you just being able to watch them. What did you take away from what he was, I mean, because that's what everybody that's listening to this is going like, well, what did you
learn? Yeah, it's like, well, I was sworn to secrecy. No, Tony really got into the finesse of the purrs, and he tried like calm purrs at first, and you know, kind of like you're almost like we went through clucking and then some soft purring and trying to make it sound inviting. And we did that for 30 minutes probably. And you know, this thing, it was kind of funny. We were just to explain like how determined this bird was to not come to us. Tony would call and yelp and he would bring up three other gobblers that were coming with three of them together would come back up from various sides. And then this big bird that was on our left would gobble. And it was the raspiest, like gobble, gobble, gobble. You know, these other ones like, and then you hear this thing and you're like, that is such a distinctly different gobble sound. You could tell it was an older, like this is the bad mamma jamma of the woods, right? We ended up nicknaming him Gobzilla before we could even see him, because you knew this thing was huge, because he would come down and gobble and then those other birds would run off. You could literally hear them take off when he would gobble, and that was pretty cool in itself, right? So this went on for an hour of like calling in three, and then this thing would come down and yell at them and then they would run off. Okay, we got to call them back because this guy's not coming. And so finally though, this guy got to where we could see him 100 yards out through brush, and we knew he was there. We were pretty sure he was with the hen. He's spitting and drumming and you could hear it. And Tony even said, he's like, dude, the fact that we can hear that at 80 to 100 yards away, we couldn't range it because he's just eyeballing it. But it's like, holy smokes, that's a big bird. And so he got into that like soft clucks and, you know, some purrs. And then the thing that I wouldn't have known to do was he started then getting aggressive with the hen and getting her irritated. Mm-hmm. And she never came all the way down, but that was enough to where it interested him now. And then he started coming to the fighting purrs that he started doing. And again, it was like he was just kind of going through his bag of tricks. It wasn't like, and he didn't even tell you, he was kind of getting frustrated. Cause I mean, at this point, we've been calling this bird for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And I would have 100% given up before, probably walked out of the field in frustration, like an hour, you know, midway through after this bird would not move this long, but we worked it And the fight, when he started, once it was like committed off of the fighting purse, then it was on. Like he came in. I mean, he didn't run, but it was a 5-minute 100-yard walk. He's moving and swollen up, and he's still moving around, you know. And then he came in. We got footage of this. It was killer footage. He comes in, like, basically went right at the decoy, and Tony ended up telling the guy to shoot it after one pass because he was afraid. This guy's on camera. It's a sweepstakes. He's hunting with a professional. He's got me and two other guys sitting behind him. So Tony could tell he was nervous. So he took him really quick. There was no like watching it fight the decoy, 'cause we were afraid he was going to get nervous and miss.
Yeah. Those guys that know what they're doing. I mean, so like I just pulled this one from, so this is like, I don't know.
Nice.
11 inches, 11.
That's what I say. It looks like an 11 inch beard.
Something. And that bird, my father-in-law used to call for Rod Benson game calls. He called at all the shows, and he'd go around. So I know exactly what you're talking about. When you see someone who, I mean, when he sits down, I guess, like, you know, when you see like one of those videos, like whatever, like CIA guy or whatever, they have like a torture scene and they come out and they roll out their bag,
torture kit,
and yeah, they got like, that's what he's like. He's got, you know, a dozen strikers.
Here are my bamboo shoots.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And so, I mean, that's what he does. And he's like, if this one doesn't work, then it's this one. And then as soon as he gets them going, but that bird in particular, we had seen from the road and we were actually leaving and I thought it was a stump. And he's like, no, that's a bird. And we went around the corner and it was a solid 2 hours. I had fallen asleep and he was 50 yards or so behind me, and he actually got up to leave, and that bird had come around the corner, and it was just slow. He just strutted the entire way. I mean, 2 hours of this bird just strutting back and forth, but he was just slowly working his way to our decoy set, and I ended up waking up to turkeys all around me.
That's then, awesome, though.
And then I ended up killing him, but yeah, that
Tony did the same thing. He had That was another thing. After that, I was like, I hunt with way too few calls, because he would just keep rotating through trying to find something that they liked. That part of it was like fishing. You know, you're throwing something until you start getting bites, and then consistently you'll start getting bites off of that, whatever they're liking that day. Right. He was doing a lot of that and rotating through. The other thing that was kind of funny to me, was how loud he was, like in general. He would do a whole lot of simulated like scratching and realism. You know, he's like raking a stick and stuff. And I was like, man, I would have thought you'd spook a turkey, mm-hmm, doing some of the stuff he was doing. And the other thing, just comically, like talking at almost normal volume at times. And I'm like, these things can hear incredibly well, but this guy knew what he was doing. It was just funny. Like, I wouldn't recommend that part of it, but I bring this up to say he has hunted turkeys enough to know when he's not heard. Like, it was very interesting. I mean, we killed a massive bird, so it obviously worked. But I thought that part of it was kind of funny, because sometimes he'd just be talking normal volume and then sometimes he'd whisper. But I hadn't hunted with a turkey guy before, so it was kind of funny to me.
Yeah. It's, you know, I didn't grow up turkey hunting. And so I've just gotten into it through all this. And you say, well, you know, I didn't kill a bird last year. Like, I haven't killed a bird in, well, since we've been doing the podcast, I've been trying to kill him with a bow. And,
tough.
For us, like we're in Michigan, there's turkeys everywhere. Like, I've missed so many turkeys with my bow. Like last
year, you're shooting at a target that's nothing.
Well, last year I tried to shoot one with a longbow, and I missed like literally where I'm talking to you at right now is probably like 8 feet from the TV, and that's about how far I missed that last year. Just, and it was so fun. Like, we were laughing and cutting up and stuff, and what you said about like the one buck in Kentucky, like how you didn't want your season to be over. Like, that's the way that it is for turkey season, right? It's like, we get one turkey here in Michigan and, you know, it's over, and it can be over as soon as the sun comes up, you know, and especially with a shotgun. So like, it is such, I understand how people like down south, like live and breathe turkey hunting when you can kill more than one bird? Or maybe you're like in like northern Florida or northern Georgia or something where you can be in three different states in an hour right. or something. So, you know, the season is longer. It makes for a completely different feel than like for me, it's like, well, kill one turkey and I'm not traveling to other states to hunt turkeys at this point. So
yeah,
it's over.
Assuming we have our normal tags, Kentucky can do two. So assuming they didn't change that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where, you know, everybody's kind of head is moving towards the turkey season. And for us, it's just the next thing, you know, your wife's like, oh, well, you just hunt all the time now. Like, well, I have a, you know, a hunting podcast. Like you're like, well, it's for work, honey. You know, it's for, yeah. you know, we got to have this. For-
yeah. Dude, the one thing that, if you ask me the same question of like, because I've gotten better at my first few seasons going after turkeys were just abysmal. Actually, my first season, I killed the biggest bird I've ever killed. He's got a beard similar to what you pulled up there. I think it was 10 and a half inches. Total luck. Me and my dad had no idea what we were doing and just happened to like, we got permission on this property. We go up, we set a blind up. We're like, I don't know. This looks like a good turkey spot. And then, you know, had a bunch of them come in and I shot this big gobbler. He was like 24 and a half pounds. And I've yet to even get close to that again. But you know, it's funny because, when I started hunting, it's like the guys that I was talking to hunted with turkey blinds and that's just what you did. And I thought that's how you hunted turkeys. And then, when I got into Go Wild, I started talking to these guys cause you know, selfishly I have hosted, I think I'm on my third podcast now, meaning like shows. So like I had another show, one show we did, I don't know, probably 200 episodes on with bonus shows total. I've done Gearbox Talk, which we're approaching 100 episodes on. And so I've gotten to talk to some really smart people. It's like you said, it's kind of a nice little benefit of hosting a podcast. And when I started learning about the running gun, that, mm-hmm. that being mobile and turkey hunting is everything. I mean, it is everything. I learned that also, reinforced with hunting with that pro, you know, those guys would very quickly decide they did not want to be in a spot and they'd move. And you know, these are guys that again have killed 600 birds, 600 plus birds in his life. So, you know, I think too often people are sitting all day yelping to themselves instead of trying to move. And yeah, you're going to get busted some, but you're going to also hear a lot of turkeys off in the distance that you might be able to pull, especially if you're not hunting Easterns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And that's the, you know, when I got into turkey hunting, like there was no blind, there was no anything. And
yeah,
you know, the only since we've been trying to hunt them with bows, have we implemented the blind, but
yeah, you have to, I mean, you got to have some kind of block, even if it's not full blind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, we even got into one, like I say, I missed them all, so I missed them every single way, but we ran it, we were running and gunning them with no blind, and yeah. I got a shot on one, and I ended up hitting a tree, hit a branch.
I always tell people, it's like, yeah, I would love to turkey hunt with a bow, but it's hard enough for me with a shotgun. I don't really need that extra layer of complexity of trying to draw. You know, so I didn't get a bird last year. I did get one in 2020. I called him my redemption bird because that bird, I hadn't killed one in a couple years. And I ended up shooting a Jake because I like turkey legs. It's like, I wasn't going to hold my pride. And like the first bird I've had within 50 yards in years, I'm not going to pass on him. I haven't scouted for turkey yet, on my property, but it's always good to me. It's always got birds. So, I plan on being out there for it this year with my shotgun. Cause I'm just in it for the turkey legs, man. That's like, I got some great, like Vietnamese soups and stuff that I like to make with those turkey legs.
Yeah. I'll have to get that recipe. We'll link it down in the show notes. I'm going to kill one with a bow this year. I'm done messing around.
I can tell. I can feel it. This is your year.
Well, and we talk about it with rifle hunting, like, with all of deer hunting and everything, but like if you would have seen the misses and the things that have happened to me, like there's no reason that I shouldn't have killed the turkey. Yeah. I mean, I've had all the opportunities in the world. It was just me.
I've talked to a couple guys about this, and I'm always finding it interesting. Are you going for vitals or are you going for head?
Well, so this year it's going to be minute a bird. Like I'm putting it on its wing butt. I'm going to shoot him in the center of the fan if he's facing away from me. Yeah. I'm not shooting for the head. And last year I was shooting for the head with a big gobbler guillotine on, you know, out of a longbow. So I got a 64 inch bow in this blind, and literally the turkey was 7 yards away, 5 yards away, maybe. And I just sent it right over top of his head. I never even came to full draw. I mean, the turkey was in there. We got tons of video of him fighting the decoy and doing all the stuff. And then I just sent one right over his head. And with even right now, like before the podcast, I can shoot 10 yards in my basement. I've been shooting the longbow 10 yards in the basement, 10 yards in the basement, but I'm not even messing around with that. Like I'm going to send a broadhead through the vitals of a turkey. But the one
I've always thought that makes more sense, because even if it's not a great shot, they're going to be wounded. You can probably pull off a second shot on them.
Go to my YouTube and there's a video of me running across the field with a turkey that has my arrow stuck in his wing. He was strutting like this and he turned like quartering away, and I shot one right through his wing bone into the decoy. So mm-hmm. I killed a $110 Avian X.
That's the same as an Avian X. Oh, no.
And it pulled out the insert. So the broadhead stayed in the decoy, and the turkey ran off with my arrow. And I'm chasing it across this field. And
you know what? There's a product idea. I'm mulling here. I'm seeing like bow fishing for turkeys. You know, just put them on a string and then you reel them into you once you pluck them. Somebody go make that product.
Well, after this year, we're gonna see. I mean, they used to make those. There was a string tracker. There was all that stuff. They got.
So this was a thing.
Oh, so back in the day, like way back in like the late '80s, early '90s, there used to be like. On your stabilizer, that used to be just a spool, and there was and you would put that behind your broadhead, and so you'd shoot through a deer, and it would just zip out.
I've never seen this.
Yeah,
which I didn't get into deer hunting until way later than that. So,
it's
funny.
So back in the day, that did exist.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Yeah,
I mean, I've seen that with the bow fishing, so I'm familiar with the technology. I guess somebody said, "Hey, we could fish with this."
Yeah, and I wouldn't doubt that at all. So I'm gonna have to. I don't know. John might still have one, but I'll look it up. I'll make a post on Go Wild. We haven't even got into like what Go Wild is.
Really. I told you sometimes this happens.
So let's talk about like. The whole Go Wild thing. So you said when you got out of college and then you were getting into hunting, and I just feel like people don't normally do that if you went to school if you were in medical school, right? So what did you go to college for, and how did that transition to Go Wild or whatever?
Yeah. So I have a very unusual background for a tech CEO. I actually am a journalism major. And I was a journalist for several years before jumping ship. And I did advertising for 7 years before launching Go Wild. So, or before going full time with Go Wild, I had about an 18 month period where I worked full time in advertising and was still getting Go Wild off the ground. So I have a background in storytelling, really. I mean, that's the part that applies. Is that, pretty much my whole career, whether I was a journalist or in advertising, I did a lot of branding work for companies, naming companies, coming up with backgrounds and interesting stories for branding. So all that's just storytelling at the end of the day. And, you know, for our company, what are we then, you know, helping someone tell their story and helping people develop their stories. You know, if you want to learn more about turkey hunting, we have what I think is the best platform to do it. You know, I use it all the time in that way. If I want to learn something, I'm asking questions of the community and pushing it that way. And, you know, I think I think my team would tell you, and my co-founders would tell you, there's four co-founders total. I think they would tell you that, you know, everybody brought something to the table that you couldn't take away, right? It was very foundational to the company. And one of my skills was definitely just understanding the storytelling, and then from the hunter angler perspective, right? Of like that's my value add to the product.
And so what is it? So for guys who are like, well, you know, I've heard about Go Wild, or I've seen it.
Yeah, it's like you guys keep talking about it, but you don't tell us what it is.
Right. Exactly. Tell us the story. Come on.
So Go Wild is a social media platform for outdoor enthusiasts. You can share your content there. It's going to be uncensored. You're not going to get flagged, throttled, and shadow banned and all that good stuff. And in fact, we actually give you points. So if you load in your deer from last season, you'll earn points, and you may not care about points until I tell you that points get you rewards. So you can also shop on our platform. So these rewards come in the form of sometimes free stuff. Like right now, if you download and post a couple times, you're probably going to get a free t-shirt. We do stickers. We have discounts to Garmin. Like there's $100 off a Garmin Zero that you can earn. You can unlock 25% off muck boots. There's Vortex rewards in there. Any brand that we sell, we usually have some kind of reward that you can unlock at some point. There's $5 gift cards, there's $25 gift cards, there's flat rate discounts. So the platform is really rewarding you for your time outside. And, you know, there's all these different ways you can share. You can share your trophy, which pins your deer or your fish or whatever to your profile. So if I check out your profile, I can kind of see what you're into and see some of the trophies you have quickly. One of the coolest things, because we do have that shopping component and we have the social side. It's not just a social app where you can shop. You can actually post and tag gear. So as you're, you know, looking for gear, one of the coolest things is that, like, if I look up a Garmin Instinct right now on our platform, there's like 170 posts about that product. And so you can actually go through and see how people are using that product in the field. And, you know, it's something like an optic. You know, if you're looking at red dots and you're wondering if that red dot's good for turkey hunting, you can look it up in our app and see, are people using this for turkey hunting? Oh, here's 12 people that use this. You can interact with those people. This isn't like an Amazon review where you're like, oh, I don't know. I can see that there's a review, but I can't ask this person questions really. Like there's no dialogue really. So you can actually, you know, communicate with people about the gear. You can tag that gear when you're posting. That's how we're getting that information. So when you post a deer on Go Wild, you can actually tag the broadheads you're using or whatever it is. So we've got 500,000 plus products that you can tag. That's growing by the week on how many products we have. And then if we don't have it, you can upload your own stuff. So if you shoot a custom bow, you can upload that and share that as part of your story. So I kind of threw a lot at people, but basically what it boils down to is the social, the shopping, and the rewards.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you a question here, and it's not like derogatory or whatever, but like, so, you know, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn, all this stuff, like, why do we need another app?
Yeah.
To have to follow or take time on. I mean, you're rewarding the time for, you know, so you're incentivizing it like in that way. But like, you know, that's what everybody's going to say. It's like, why is it necessary? We're already going through all of these other things.
Yeah. So, you kind of answered it for me earlier. You said everybody's here trying to learn. I have the fastest way to learn anything. You can post a question on our platform and crowdsource answers. I mean, I've seen people turkey hunting and turkey season say, I'm going to bed tonight, but it's going to be raining and windy all night long. I'm going turkey hunting in the morning, and I have no idea how this weather is going to impact turkeys. Can you guys help? That person wakes up to 15, 20 comments on their post, ready to roll. And it's like, where else can you do that? Because most of these guys that you're talking about listening to your show, you know, if you're new to something, you generally don't know where to turn to. It's like me with whitetail hunting, right? I sucked at it and I didn't have people to coach me on it. So where do I turn to get help? And so we built a system, and I don't want to keep like adding things you can do because it makes it sound complicated. But it's when you post, you can tap a button that says ask the community. So if you have a question, literally we ask you, if you're asking a question, push that button, dude. Now the algorithm goes to work and it's like, well, Brad is posting about turkey hunting. Here are the top people in turkey hunting that I think it will be able to answer this question for him. So the app will actually message people, not message, they get a notification like Brad's asking a question that we think you can help with. I mean, it's awesome for crowdsourcing knowledge. Like that is by far what we built it to do. You can tap into turkey hunting. Like we have, we don't operate on a friends model. You can follow somebody and be buddies with them or whatever, but you don't have to do that. It's content based. So think of it more like a Reddit or bunch of Facebook groups. So if you want to go into the turkey hunting Facebook group, which we call a trail, you can also hit the near me button, which now all of the people in my state, so you're in Michigan, all of the people in Michigan and within 120 miles of you that are talking about turkey hunting right now, here they are. You can go in and connect with all these people. Like you can't do that. There's nowhere else to be able to do that. We've really tried to focus on building a product that is not just replicating Facebook and coloring it camo or Hunter Orange. That's what most of the social apps for hunting have done up till now. And then they stick maps in it. It's like, okay, like there are literally have been dozens of that product I just described. It's like, oh, let's go make a Facebook for hunting, and they don't add anything to that experience. Well, you can't out Facebook. Facebook as a product is really hard to compete with. So we've tried to focus on things that you can't find elsewhere, like the near me feature, where I can find bass fishermen near me, or you know, this is a great way to find people to fish with if that's what you're into. We have the gear functionality I mentioned, the rewards we mentioned, and a ton of people. I've been shocked at how much it resonates with people that I just tell them, because it's happening to enough people now that they know it's happening. But the fact that we don't throttle your posts or censor you for posting guns, you know, you can't even post a picture of a gun on TikTok or a video of a gun on TikTok. It's against their terms, and they use artificial intelligence to scan those videos, and they'll remove your videos. And then if you do it again, you know, enough times, they'll delete your account. So we're in a space where it's not only allowed, but rewarded.
How is it moderated? And I mean, hopefully you wouldn't have to deal with that, because, you know, in theory, you're bringing in all the like-minded people. So everybody's excited about all of these topics. But I mean, if we are projecting out that Go Wild is the Facebook for deer hunters or the TikTok for deer hunters or whatever, I mean, isn't there the propensity for eventually the antis or someone to come in and then they can just spam everything as?
Yeah, they could. We haven't had too much of the anti stuff, and we get bots every now and then. Anytime you have an app that's getting downloaded a lot, you're going to get bots. They're not even bots. Bots is the wrong term. I say that because people know what I mean. It's actually just scammers. I mean, you're going to get scammers on any platform. I get them on my LinkedIn all the time. When I was on Instagram, I got them all the time. Instagram's really bad for it because they are bots. They're automated. We have terms though. And I get this question a lot of like, how are you going to handle this when it happens? Our terms are totally different than what other platforms are doing. Other platforms are trying to please everybody. And our terms say, if you come in here, you know, harassing people for legal hunting take, we will delete you. And we have. And I mean, and that's sometimes that's hunters. That's the thing. People always ask me about the antis. You know, I'll delete you if you come in and you make fun of a kid for shooting a spike. you're gone. Like, that's not what we do in our platform. In that way, it is more like a really well moderated Facebook group or a Reddit thread. You know, if you've ever been in a subreddit, where the moderator really takes it seriously and like they police it well, it can be a great place to connect with people. A lot of those forums can be really intimidating though. You know, if you've ever posted on a Facebook group and gotten yelled at because that question was just asked 2 days ago, like that happens. It doesn't happen on our platform. For whatever reason, we've got a more familial feel to it. You know, people are really cool. But on in terms of like how you ask, how does it get moderated? We are not moderating really much at all directly. It's pretty much there's an algorithm that knows what you follow. It knows who you interact with, and it knows of the people that you follow and we think are like the people you would like, how popular their content is. So we try to get stuff that's in front of you that's interesting. That's first and foremost. And again, that's mostly based off of what you follow from a content perspective. So if we know you're into turkey hunting, you're going to get turkey hunting content. Then it kind of comes down into, you know, again, interactions with posts, trying to put popular content in front of you that other people have said they liked. And then from there, if people report content, that goes directly into a system that our team uses for everyday chats at work. And so if there is something that is, it could be anything from like, again, somebody trolling a kid over a legal take that's against our terms, to porn. You know, we deal with all this stuff at certain, some type, some way or another. You know, the porn's on the lesser side, but we have to be ready for that, right? Because that's something that has happened. You get some Yahoo that comes in and does something like that. You know, most of the time those are down and removed from the platform within minutes, you know? So, we have a pretty sophisticated system built in, but it's not like TikTok, who is literally, you know, using artificial intelligence in real time to scan and see if you're holding a gun to delete your account. Like, that's a whole different level. But, you know, for a team of 13, we do pretty good compared to these teams that have, you know, 60,000 employees, I would say.
Okay. And then
Facebook's own data says, just a fun fact for you. You know, I kind of picked on them for having, for having so many employees, but they get it wrong by their own account 200,000 times a day. That's how many times they know they get it wrong. So like, we're not dealing with any level of the amount of if that's just they're wrong, you can think how much content they're actually seeing and how much gets reported. You know, they get more wrong than we'll see in a year in terms of reported posts. It's like in a day, it's like that different from the spectrum of size.
And so I know that you can put up, photos and everything up on your account. Is there a video proponent to it as well?
Yeah, we do have a video, you can upload. I think it caps at 2 minutes right now. We're working on that. You know, even I think TikTok is trying to add longer videos. That's pretty common to start small because video server space is a killer for startups. It's so expensive, man. Video in general is really hard to do well. It's something we haven't really focused on a ton. You can upload a 2 minute video though. And, you know, that's one thing we've been focusing on lately is trying to get that upload faster and more competitive. But I think you can actually even upload like video reviews now. You know, we've been adding in more and more video functionality as we grow.
Okay. So where do you see it going? Like, what is the end game? Like, what's the goal?
Yeah. So the thing that I really want us to be, like, I don't really have a goal of like, I need 10 million people active on the platform. You know, for more than anything, the goal for me, just to give you my CEO answer, is to be profitable so that this thing's sustainable. You know, we are a startup. I've raised money to be able to do this. So I've gone the venture capital route. It's not something most of your audience even gives a rip about, but I bring it up to say that, you know, if you're going to support a company when you shop, you know, we're one that's trying to do it differently. I mentioned some of the content side of what we're doing differently, but we're also donating 1% of our profits to a camp that teaches kids to hunt, fish, and shoot. You know, it's a 2A it's a 2A camp. You know, it's something you could be proud that your part of your purchase is going to. You know, we are trying to do things differently, although it's a really hard time to do this. Our members get free shipping on everything. Even if you buy a dog kennel from Go Wild, you get free shipping on it. And we eat that out of our margin. So we're trying to be a place that I'm trying to grow this into a company. We lose money on some of those sales, but I'm trying to be a company that is earning your overall business and that you look to us first to see if we have it. That's something we have to earn the right to, you know. We are small. Sometimes we screw up stuff. It's not common, but we want to be a company that if I screw up, I bend over backwards so hard for you that you remember it and like you're going to shop again, even though I screwed up your last order. So growing the business to be healthy is as CEO, that's my job, is like to think about that. From a product perspective, you know, there's a couple things we'd like to do. I really want to have Facebook groups for our platform. It's been asked a million times. It's probably one of our biggest weaknesses that we don't have it right now. We're a custom built app. There are a lot of guys that have spun up and are still spinning up. There's a new one announced at ATA. You know, there's a lot of these things that pop up, but they're out of the box stuff. And like, it's kind of like you go into like a Blue Apron or a HelloFresh and, you know, making the meal. It's kind of all done for you. And there's limitations to how creative you can get with something that like you only cook with what's in the box, right? Mine's fully custom, man. So like I've built all this stuff. I haven't. I'm not a developer, but my team and I have built all this from scratch. And so it takes us a little bit longer to do some stuff like that, but we do it right and we do it in a way that's sustainable. So we're working on the group thing. I hope will happen eventually. More than anything, you know, I see us becoming more of a place where you have, it's like your go-to when you have a question. You know, a lot of people go to YouTube to find answers now. Like I want us to be that for within the hunting and fishing and shooting communities, because they're like, well, why would I look for this when I can just post it on Go Wild and have 5 answers in an hour? You know, I want to have that kind of community that we're building. Another thing that we're working on right now is live events. And, you know, we just did the big Pennsylvania show, which was, you know, I dipped the toe into that. You know, our booth, we built our own booth. We went up there and exhibited, we sold and got to sold gear and got to meet members, but we're reigniting this thing we used to do before the pandemic, which is just live events where it's, you know, maybe taking over a brewery for the day. We've got an archery focused event coming up in July that I have not announced yet. This is the first little teaser I have of what we're working on, but, you know, news will be coming out of that soon. And we're hoping to do, that's going to be in Louisville, Kentucky, where we are, but I'm hoping to do another one of those somewhere. It may not be archery focused, but another live event. So like those pop-up events are going to be really fun and ways to, you know, come and meet the people you've been talking to on the platform.
Well, that's awesome. I've got a couple more questions here for you. I mean, I don't know what you got for time. We can go for forever.
No, that's great. Let's keep going.
But so you talked about like, you know, getting kids involved in hunting, and we had talked about like something earlier that you said somewhere else that was pretty controversial or whatever about. Like hunting is too white, right?
So, oh, yeah.
So how are you, I mean, I guess, can you like kind of expound on that, just on kind of like what you're thinking? And then, I mean, how does that go along with like what you're doing in this? That's that only because you had said that I was thinking like, you know, is this camp like in the inner city or like,
yeah,
you know, who is this targeting?
Question. Yeah, it's great. So the camps, there's two questions there. The camp typically is within like a 15 to 30 minute drive of a city, because we are trying to find kids who have not been exposed to hunting. Typically, it's a pretty high percentage have not hunted before. So we do try to get urban kids there. The thing you're talking about, I'll give color context, because I think we mentioned that, I think, before we started recording. Mm-hmm. And so it came up recently, Matt, just to lay a little bit of groundwork here, Matt Ranella was on Blood Origins. He wrote an article for Free Range American. He was on Meat Eater. Matt Ranella, Stephen Ranella's brother. Most people probably know what that conversation was. If you're hardcore into podcasts, you probably listen to Meat Eater or Blood Origins. They're two very popular shows in the hunting space. And Matt's opinion is that we have too many hunters. He thinks we should reduce the hunter population by half. He thinks that hunters should not post on social media. And the, when this came out, I started getting flooded with questions because I'm a co-founder of a social media app for hunting, and people wanted to know what I thought about it. And to try to give this, make this as succinct as possible, I think talking about there being too many hunters and there being, should we be posting on social media and a lot of the topics, you know, there were things I even agreed with about Matt, and I wrote a really long blog response to it. It's like 3,500 words, and outline this. But I think what it comes down to is that with all of this discussion, we're standing at the altar of the church arguing over whether or not we have too many altar candles when behind us the entire sanctuary is burning to the ground. And what I mean by that is we're arguing over things that they matter in this vacuum. Like, yeah, overcrowding matters when you're hunting. I talked about public land and like the Orange Army of when I started hunting, and like, yeah, it kind of sucks when you're sitting there, you know, and a side by side comes tearing through by your tree. But at the end of the day, what we should be looking at is looking at the Sportsman's Alliance website, which is a nonprofit that fights for your rights as a hunter. And every day they're posting new legislation against hunting, that they're talking about legislation that they're battling. Just to help people, like if you want to think of them as like the NRA of hunting rights, that's what they do. And, you know, when you see how many cases those guys are fighting, and I know those guys personally, I've had them on my old podcast. I've been to many industry events with them and talked to them many, many times. And we are outfunded. We are outmanned. This is the fight of a lifetime against us. And so when we're talking about things as silly as like, oh, my spot had the parking lot, you couldn't even find a place to park at the trailhead. Like, dude, yeah, that sucks, but you are missing the point so hard right now. Like we're in a space that in 30 years, your kids may not be able to park at that same trailhead to go hunting because it may be illegal. I'm not making this stuff up. You know, people think I get a little too extreme on this sometimes, but look at New Jersey. You know, they aren't going to pass something that says you can just never hunt again, period. It happens a little at a time. It's bobcats. It's trapping. You know, it's doves in Michigan. Why can you guys not hunt doves, but the rest of us can? It's stupid. It's black bears in New Jersey. It's British Columbia. All this stuff happens with one little piece of legislation at a time. Or sometimes, like what came out recently with this group with the Biden administration. I mean, there's huge sweeping legislation that can happen. And so, some of what this very long answer is building off of, you mentioned that I've said that hunting is too white. Hunting is 97% white. And so, how do you win against litigation that is well funded by groups like the Humane Society? You know, the Humane Society is probably our biggest arch nemesis in hunting. And I'm not talking about your local, you know, go adopt a puppy. The national organization is what I'm talking about. They are funding the fight against us left and right. And if we're 97% white, we need diversity. And hunting is too white, because how do you win against any litigation? You win it at the polls. Okay. What is like politics 101 when you're trying to win a vote, right? You look at the demographics of where you're doing well And then you look at where you're not doing well, but you might have a chance to get a tipping point, right? Well, look, guys, I mean, I'm not saying not to bring your friends, but we've got the rural white male covered, right? Like that part, that audience is going to vote for hunting. Where we need to be focused are the Blacks, the Latinos. We need more women, and so on. Whatever group that's not white, male, and rural, we should be trying to get those people into hunting. And you know, I get it. Like I took some flack over that article because of that line that's saying that hunting's too white. I had a guy message me on our app and say, you know, you're just pushing the same woke crap as everybody else. And I said, look, man, I understand why that would trigger that thought for you. But the fact is, like, do you not think that hunting is at risk? And he said, no. And that's, you know, honestly, that's, I told him, like, shame on you for your ignorance, because it's just not how it is. You know, again, go to sportsmansalliance.org. Go to their blog, and you cannot scroll for a single page without seeing two or three new pieces of legislation that are against hunting. So, you know, if we want to diversify, we need programs like that camp I mentioned. We need to, go invite your Black co-founder to go hunting with, or your Black coworker to go hunting with you. Invite the lady over in payroll who is, like, you know, totally different than you in whatever way. Those are good things. It doesn't mean you stop inviting white people too. My point is not like, hey, it's not to reduce the amount of white people in volume. It's to add other groups into there to show them that, like, hey, this is cool. This contributes to conservation. It's not what I thought it was. These guys do eat all the meat. You know, those are things that we know because we're in it, but it's not widely understood outside of our circle.
I'm just trying to, like, wrap my head around, like, that the statement of, like, it's just that woke crap. Like, immediately, like, what goes into my mind is that here we are doing all this stuff that we hold, like, near and dear, that's, like, really yeah. awesome to us. And, you know, and maybe you and I are in a different mindset of many hunters, because I know this for a fact that there's people out there who are like, we, you know, I don't want to help anybody. I don't want,
oh yeah,
there's enough people in my spot trying to kill my deer, you know,
yeah,
the deer that I named and all this other stuff. But at the same time, it's like, we enjoy this so much and it's such a big part of our lives. Like, why wouldn't you want to, like, share that with, like, whoever wants to come?
Right.
You know? And like, for myself, that's the way that it's always been. Is, I mean, I was lucky enough to have married into a family where they're all, like, super into hunting. But what that gave me was, you know, you open up the pole barn and it's like Cabela's in there. Like, we have yeah. all this stuff. So it's always been for me like an open door. Like, hey, man, if you want to come hunting, like, bring whatever you got and, you know, we'll get you outfitted and we'll get you out there and we'll go through everything. And it's because I want everybody to view it through the same eyes that I do and, like, enjoy those same things that we talked about, you know, the red tail hawk chasing the squirrels and, you know, yeah. the turkeys yeah. and, like, hearing the gobbles and all that sort of stuff. Like, and it shouldn't be about, like, who gets to, who gets included and who gets excluded, you know? It shouldn't matter right. who it is.
Well, and that's what's interesting. So the final, the complex part of what I'm doing is I'm building a community that doesn't necessarily expose a lot of our story to those people that don't hunt, right? Like, if you're in our platform, you probably hunt, or you want to. You have a positive outlook on hunting, one would say. I've received criticism on that in the past of occasionally of people saying, like, well, you're building an echo chamber. And I get that. And here's my response to that, though. That's why I actually advocate for people still telling their stories on other platforms. You know, I think the way I look at how we interact with those other platforms is, you know, you probably don't want to, because we are trying to improve the image of hunting and get more people to approve it so that they'll vote for it at the polls when these things come up. You probably don't want to just blindly post your bloody deer in the back of a tailgate on Facebook or LinkedIn or whatever it is, right? You might want to try to get a more tasteful photo, or you know, and this is again where some people say like it's the woke stuff, and I'm like, no, man, this is just perception 101, and perception is reality. And so, you know, for our platform, I see it as like, this is your deer camp. This is your chance to post that raw shot that the tongue was hanging out. Nobody cares. We all get it, right? We all get it on our platform. But maybe on LinkedIn, you just post some deer tacos and say, hey, happy to get a deer. Or if you're posting a grip and grin, that's fine. But take time to make sure it's respectful, and take time to tell the other parts of the story, right? Like, you can't, I always think it's funny that like, there's always these hunters that only post the trophy shots and then get mad when the anti-hunters call them murderers. I'm like, well, yeah, the only part of the story you're telling is the death. So what are they to think? You know, you don't talk about the adventure. You don't talk about hanging out with your buddies. You don't talk about the food. You don't talk about the conservation. There's other parts of the story that you should be telling.
And so what is the, I mean, from not, I don't know, maybe it's one of the same, but like not necessarily like the Brad perspective, but the Go Wild perspective on like recruiting other ethnicities or genders or whatever. Like how are you targeting new demographics? And I mean, is there a trail for the new guy or underserved, or yeah, is there a mentor,
you know? We have a mentorship trail, yes. And that is to both post about as you share your story as a mentor, or, you know, post if you had questions, that's a great place to put it in there. You ask like, what are we doing? A lot of our strategy this year is to, you know, I think there's a big gap of content in that podcasters are covering this, but not on the written side. Like on the written side, if you read an article in Peterson's, it has like a 30 to 40% base level knowledge that you need to understand sometimes to really, to get what they're talking about on something. Cause they just, they operate for a, it's like a different speed hunter, right? Like these are guys that are hardcore, that they really enjoy reading these hunting stories, but these hunting stories are usually written just at a certain skill level. We, in almost all of our content you'll see us putting out this year, are trying to operate on that 30% and down, not all of it, a majority of our content, I'll say. Every now and then we're going to do like some advanced stuff, but trying to make it just more accessible for anybody that's looking. That's really where we stand the best chance of connecting with our brand. It is being there in a place that's inviting, which we have with our community. With we actually, just to nerd out for a second, like my team actually scours the Google search records of what people are looking for. And that's how we plan our podcasts. That's how we plan our all of our written content. So the written side, we're trying to write blogs that we know people are looking for from a new perspective. On the diversity side, with my show, Gearbox Talk, we've done a really good job, better than most shows in the outdoor space. I've tried to make it, you know, go beyond your average 20 to 40 year old white guy. You know, we can always do better with diversity, but it's you know, we've had our share of female guests, of black guests, you know, other ethnicities, and trying to get that blended in, because you know, I think when you start talking about this, I understand a little bit of how people get to that, like, oh, this is a bunch of woke stuff, like everybody's just trying to be like anti-racist, like after 2020, right? But for me, after talking to some of these guys like Earl B. Hunter Jr., who founded Black Folks Camp 2, his whole thing is like, there, when there's nobody else that looks like you, you're not comfortable. So if I can do my part of just having, even on our show, you know, a guy like Elon Stribling, who's a really well-known biologist and fly fisherman, if I get him on my show, now if a, you know, an urban black kid's trying to learn how to fly fish and they've got interest in that, well, I've platformed Eland in another place. He, and that, Eland's all over the place. He didn't need my help. But my point is, I'm helping project content that that black kid might resonate better with now because it's somebody that looks like him. You know, representation matters, man. I mean, if you've ever been in any environment where you feel uncomfortable, if you're a hardcore conservative and you get thrown in a room with like a bunch of liberal vegans, you're probably going to feel pretty uncomfortable. You know, it's like it, put yourself in that shoes and you can see how, you know, skin color representation matters, how gender, you know, we just did a Gearbox talk with a female who she was talking about everyday carry. And I didn't host that show because what do I know about carrying guns with boobs to or hips to work around, right? That's like not, it's not something that I would understand. So this my co-founder or my co, I keep calling everybody co-founders, my teammate Erica came in because the things that they were talking about with concealing that women have to deal with that dudes don't, you know, it wouldn't be inappropriate, it wouldn't be comfortable, right? It's like an uncomfortable conversation. And so we try to really I think we do a better job than most. I'm sure we can do better, but you know, I'm pretty proud of where we are in our diversity content.
Sure. I mean, the question was asked simply because it's a bold statement. And so it's like, you can, anybody can say anything really. And, but it's, what are you guys doing to,
yeah,
you know,
no, totally. I appreciate the question. Nobody's ever probably had the balls to ask me that after I've talked about it.
Well, I mean, that's the things that really matter. I mean, that's why, like, you know, just from the Go Wild side, you know, I talked to these guys at ATA and I'd been on Go Wild before that. And I'm like, look, I'm a creator. Like, this is what we do. But like, for me, I wasn't like figuring it out. It wasn't intuitive to me. And so I talked with Jacob and we went through all of it. And I've been using the Go Wild platform here for the last couple of weeks. And it's very, I can see all of the benefits of it, but it's like when I switch from using Onyx to Basemap to Spartan Forge, like there's all these little intricacies. So if you've been using Facebook for, you know, 20 years now or however long it's been, you know, you're looking for these things. And since you've, you know, said, well, we didn't build a cookie cutter app, like we didn't just pull it in. So, it, you know, it might not be that intuitive. So you just have to use it and become part of the community. Right.
And, you know, we've kept some things because the intuitive conversation is interesting. You know, there are things that are done on mainstream platforms because they're addictive. There are things that are done on mainstream platforms because they just make sense, right? Like, and most people don't think about this. A well-designed app, for example, is going to have your navigation at the bottom. Why do they do that? Because that's where your thumbs are, right? Like, that's where your thumbs are. People don't think about why buttons are where they are, but there's reasons we do that. So we have a post button at the bottom, like every other app. That part's familiar to you. You get into it though, and now we have different post types. And it's like, oh, well, I'm not used to this. This is different. But like, we have a trophy feature that is totally different. If you've posted a trophy on our app, you know, it's like you go through and answer a series of questions about your trophy, and then you get a score. That's how we give you your points. And this is not Boone and Crockett, but it's fun, right? You know, there has to be some places where we diverge and do something like trophies. You know, our home screen is totally different. And that is a disorienting thing to hit when you hit that. But that's because it's kind of, it's a little bit of you. You know, there's your messages are there, your rewards are there. It's got some other content that you, the app thinks you might find interesting. It's got notifications or like a little an announcement section. So, you know, I do agree that that's very different. You know, the thing I usually say to people when they ask me, that's like, well, I mean, really with the state of social media today, I figure different's probably good. Right.
Yeah. Well, but my point in that was saying that, like, I wanted to make sure that before I had you on here or that we were even going to have this conversation, that it was something that I could say, like, certainly this is what, you know,
yeah. worth checking out.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, back to all that and like to say, well, you know, maybe I'm the only one that has the balls to ask the question, but like I would be doing both of us a disservice if, and the listener too, if I didn't ask that, because again, it's always from like the listener perspective is like, you can say whatever you want, but if you can't back it up, like you could have come on here and said, yeah, well, I only kill 170s or better. And then, then we go on, go wild. And then you go out of there, you're like, he shot a spike. Like, what in the hell?
What? Yeah. Right.
You know,
no, I always tell people I'm not smart enough to lie. So I don't like, I'd never be able to keep it all straight. So, in general, I try to be a pretty straight shooter. And I think if people like I post on our platform, I think that also surprises people, you know, that, and it's not like I have a PR person that's reading my post. I mean, I'm active there. People will be able to find me. If they download the app after hearing this conversation, you're going to get an automated message from me. And I'll tell you now, it's automated because I don't send thousands of people a week a message. But if you reply back, that is really me. So the first one's automated and we just hope that people reply back and I get to build a relationship with people. But dude, I message thousands of people a month on the platform. It's kind of insane. I don't know how scalable it is, but at this time, it's really important to me to get to know people and hear their complaints if they have them. Most of it's awesome that people, some of the number one things I hear are, this is awesome. It's like deer camp. I love how supportive everybody is. And literally one of the most common ones that has kind of built up over the last year and a half is it's awesome to be able to post and not get censored or trolled by anti-hunters.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's great. So I want to wrap this up here. I always ask, what is your bow setup? So what bow are you shooting? Arrows, like the whole thing. Well, and it's probably, you know, this sometimes gets people off guard because they're like, I don't really bow hunt that much, but you, I would have to imagine you do not let me down on this. Otherwise we're going to have to talk to the people at Go Wild because you should have set up like your gear locker.
I do have mine. I do have, you asked about the arrows and now I'm like, that's the one thing I can't even remember what kind of arrows I have, but I do have it set up on my, my profile, my archery setups on there. I may not have changed. I think I did. Okay. My setup is I shoot a, Obsession, Hemorrhage HD. It's from a couple, I think they may have replaced that bow with something else. That was I have the 2018, this is my first season hunting with the Garmin Zero, bow sight. And I did not shoot at an animal with it this year. I like it. I like target shooting with it. I'm comfortable with it. I wouldn't shoot anything past 40 yards or really 30 yards. Cause that's my skill level. I've got it out to 60 and I love that sight. Basically it takes your rangefinder and your single pin sight and it combines them and it adjusts the pin to where it ranges to. So for me, what it's limited is your ranging and adjusting and, you know, you're just more likely to get busted. And, I really like that I can range without even moving with that. So I can, if I'm sitting there holding my bow upright, I can look through it and push the button and I can see the range. And you can range out to like 200, you can range game out to 250 yards. Obviously you're not shooting game that far, but, I have, funny enough, I have that really expensive bow sight on there and I have like just a cheap old, whisker biscuit on my bow because it's reliable and I did all the research and I cannot tell that the drop ways really do anything, for a guy like me. I am not skilled enough to where, that level of like micro adjustment matters. And the speed sacrifice is actually minimal. I looked it up and I found blogs of people that had, you know, measured the speed and you're losing a hair, but, I didn't find it I had a bad experience with a drop away. I won't throw the brand under the bus, but, I traveled with one time and it almost ruined my hunt down in Texas. Because the site got so mangled or like not man, it had started pulling back too far, and it was basically throwing my arrows, but even the guide couldn't figure it out. And we just thought, we were like, I have no idea what happened to your bow in flight, but it's just torqued and screwed. So I'm not a good enough like bow techie to recognize that stuff. So I got the biscuit on there, cause I don't have to worry about it. Right. It's like super easy to adjust if something happens. I'm shooting dirt nap broadheads right now. I do change those all the time. Like, I get like a lot of free gear makes its way to me, and I don't mean that to be obnoxious. I'm sure this happens with you too. Like once you get in the industry, people send you stuff to try. I like trying new stuff. I've gotten these dirt naps at the Badlands Film Festival the last few years that I've gone, and I like them. They shoot consistent. Dude, I started using quick fletch, those like boil on, because I suck at replacing my arrows once they get busted. So I just use those, the NAP, I think it's the brand. I love those things for an idiot like me who cannot tune a bow to save his life. It's just people are obviously picking up that I'm not like a gearhead on the archery side. Stabilizer, I cannot even remember what I have. It's what I bought from Obsession that came with it. I think I covered everything.
And you don't know what the arrows are?
I can't remember the arrows, man. I don't have my phone with me. It's charging. They're on my profile. So that's my teaser. And I don't know why anybody would care at this point, because I obviously just gave like a big long example of like that I'm not really a great archer to be impressed with all my gear. But I can't remember what I bought, and I just don't pay attention to that stuff. So I don't want to say what brand it is, because I'm sure I'll get it wrong.
And then what release are you shooting?
I am shooting now I can see the logo, but I can't think of it. It's like a very common wrist release. Is it True? Yeah, I'm shooting one of those. I don't know the exact type of it's like basic go to the archery store and get hooked up with a wrist release.
Okay. Yeah, I mean I would say that you're in good company. I think for me, like a lot of times the guys that like are the really like serious like deer killers, they don't care too much about their gear. They care more about killing deer. And they're like, I've had this set up for X amount of years. It works. Then you got other guys that tweak and everything. And it's more about the setup. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't get into like, honestly, man, I'm a utilitarian. Like once I get something that works, I really won't change it until something I don't like about it. I had a, is it HDD optimizer? HHA. Thank you. I had one of those. I love that site, and I didn't really realize I didn't like it until the concept of the Garmin Zero was introduced to me. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. I am like, I get busted on ranging sometimes. Right. And you know, I've had coyotes bust me when I'm trying to shoot them ranging. And I was like, this seems to solve a problem for me, and I'm gonna try it. And I switched sites. And in fact, my buddy is literally the engineer at Garmin who built the thing. And he talked to me about it for a year. And I was like, I don't know, man, I'm pretty happy with what I have. Like, I don't want to change something just for the sake of changing it. And then, you know, finally started shooting that site and I really liked it and made the jump. I think there's a lot of people that misunderstand what that thing is. But yeah, I don't monkey with a lot of stuff until I have to. You know, it's like I shot a 30-06, which is a lot of gun on a whitetail. For years, and then finally I was like, I'm gonna, you know, chamber down a little bit, and then did some research, bought my gun. I've got a 6.5 Creedmoor that I love, and I'm sure we could do a whole episode where we argue about 6.5, but you know, I kind of went, I'll usually go all in on something that's a little nicer than entry level, like the Obsession. I bought a Christensen Arms that's like too nice for my skill level, and you know, I'll shoot that for the next 10 years. So
awesome. So let's say your elevator pitch for all the listeners about why they need to go check out Go Wild. And
yeah, so I'm going to pay you $10 to go download the app. That's like the you've heard me talk about what it is. It's a social platform where you can shop for gear, connect with other people just like you. You can find people in your area. But the big unveiling for anybody that made it like almost 2 hours with us here is you're literally going to unlock a $10 gift card when you sign up right now. It's a promotion we have going on. So you download the app, you create an account. And I think once you put your name in, it will unlock the gift card. So like it's literally getting paid to, you can go buy whatever you want. If you want to go buy a pair of boots or a t-shirt or something, you can take 10 bucks off of that. You know, the thing I always tell people, and I say this, I've spoken at a bunch of industry stuff, and the thing I leave them with, and I'll leave your audience with, is if you really care about the future of hunting and fishing, you know, you need to support the industry that supports hunting and fishing. And you know, when you buy from Amazon, you inflate Jeff Bezos' stock and he flies a rocket to space. You know, it's like you're not really contributing to anything that helps what you care about. And when you're working with us, you know, I think people have figured out I love hunting. I may not be very good at it, but like you're being a part of a company and helping a company that loves hunting and fishing as much as you do. My entire team loves hunting and fishing. You know, I've got guys that have started at our company that were hardcore, you know, AR-15, tricking out all their guns and never had hunted. And then they get into our working for us and then they go hunting for the first time. I've had that happen several times and it's a really cool experience. But everybody, even if they don't hunt, they like to fish, they like to ride horses or something, you know? So you're supporting a group that also loves the outdoors. And, you know, we're going to give a percentage of our proceeds to that camp that I talked about, the Camps Raise Them Outdoors. I'm on the board of that organization. So, you know, I would hope that people just kind of think about where you're putting your money, you know, and if you could buy it through us or you can buy it through Amazon and it's the same price, I hope I've made a compelling enough argument on, you know, why you should shop through us and why you should participate in our platform.
Awesome. And so where can people find Go Wild and, you know, how do they, if they've got questions, who do they reach out to? Do they reach out to you? Do they reach out to?
Yeah. So you can go to downloadgowild.com and that's going to take you to a landing page that you can either touch App Store or the Android Store, which are one you need for your device. And once you create an account, you're going to get that message from me. So that if you got questions, you know, that's how you get in touch with me.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate the time, Brad. And
Adam, thanks for having me on, man. This was fun. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Certainly. We'll be right back.